Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, episode 135.
Wow.
A day in the life of sales. Get ready. Let's go. Thanks for being here, guys. Mark, Brent, Joe, appreciate you.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to the podcast. First time podcast people, or you, Joe, first time?
First time, yeah. First one, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My brother podcast, so I've seen him, but this is my first.
Nice.
Middle brother, not Mitch.
Oh, okay. So, what's that podcast about?
Sports.
Sports?
Big sports guy.
You a big sports guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big sports guy. So, this is cool.
Okay.
I've seen him do it a bunch, so see.
Yeah.
Cut my teeth with it.
Try your hand at it. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Brent, you've done this before?
I think I've done one live with
We've done a couple live dashboards. I haven't done a podcast, so yeah.
Okay.
First one for me.
Okay, going out to all the world to hear. So, appreciate you guys, and you've been at Nussbaum for how long?
I'll go first. 10 years in April, so next month.
10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. Time flies.
It does. I was 23 yesterday, so I won't tell you how old I am now.
It's just a number.
It's just a number, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
I just celebrated 7 years.
Wow.
So, it's exciting.
Okay, also. Time flies, yeah.
Two and a half.
Two and a half.
It feels like 10 in a good way. It's just kind of how the culture is
here. The experience. And you've also switched roles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would kind of add to the experience. And
yeah, so started in operations, regional planner, fleet planner. Then, yeah, the last be 7 months in sales.
Okay.
So, 2.5 years.
Awesome. And you all ended up in a sales role. Business development manager, right, mm-hmm. would be your mm-hmm. title. So I have this idea of someone in sales as going to a customer and meeting them and just having a great time. Like, sales guys are just, you know, they're fun, they are smooth talkers, and they're, you know, wanting to sell their product. But there's a lot more to sales than just that. And that's why I wanted to do this episode, was it's not just about those external visits, but there's a lot of other stuff that happens behind the scenes. You mentioned from your operations experience that's something that is very valuable within this sales role. How is this operationally going to work out within sales? So I'm excited to talk about it today. It'll be fun.
Yeah, likewise, yeah.
Cool. So you've been here all from 2.5 to 10 years. How did you get here? What would that look like, getting the Nussbaum?
I could
go first.
Yeah, so it's a funny story. So I worked with Seb Chakowsky at Growmark for four years.
Go Pack.
Oh yeah, go Pack, go Pack, go. And so he had left Growmark to come over here. I was still at Growmark, and middle brother Mitch, who you all might know, he had moved up from Tennessee, living with me, and he was looking. He was going through an interview process in their company in town, and I was like, hey, reach out to Seth and see if there's something at Nussbaum. I've heard great things about it. And so Mitch came on a year before me, and then Jeremy had reached out in the summer of 22 about the planner role that opened. So having had that knowledge of how great of a company this was, I was like, I need to entertain this and see. So I wasn't looking for a job, but it's the best decision I've made professionally, for sure.
Wow.
Coming over.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah.
And so that decision was something that you have been really grateful for, you've really enjoyed.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And not even, what was your role before? Like,
so I was in
kind of a transition.
I was in sales, yeah. So I was buying fertilizer for Growmark and then selling to our members. So I did that for about 6 months, and I wasn't looking for a job. Like I said, I enjoyed what I was doing.
Yeah.
But this opportunity came up, and having knowledge of people that have worked here, it felt like the right fit. So
Did Mitch come before you?
Yeah, so he'd have been about a year, I believe.
Okay.
So he'd been here for about a year.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then Brent?
Yeah. I'm just making me think back now. But I would say, you know, I first heard about Nussbaum in a very transitional period in my life. We had just returned from the mission field, and I was trying to figure out life again and thinking about supporting a family and becoming established here in the U.S. And so kind of went through some of that transition for about a year, and was prompted with an opportunity here at Nussbaum in operations. And so, yeah, the opportunity to work for a great company that I've heard a lot of good things about and be close to family, it's all exceeded my expectations.
Wow.
So.
And Where were you at?
I was in Haiti.
In Haiti. Yeah. Well, I knew that. Saying that, I know that because I actually met Brent a long time ago, like 2012. And
that's right.
I went on a trip. It was like a father-son trip, and we went to Haiti. And I didn't know I was really meeting you. I was pretty young at the time, and I, knowing how are things going to change, but seeing this come full circle and like cool. Meeting him at work. Ever before I knew about Nussbaum, where I would start in the working world, and but it's kind of interesting to see, and so that was kind of a history right there. That, yeah, so cool. You spent how long in Haiti?
Just about 7 years.
7 years, mm-hmm. Awesome. 7 years, and then it's about 7 years here at Nussbaum. It's cool.
Hey,
Mark.
I love these stories. I love. should interview everybody here to hear their stories.
Right.
Everybody, how everybody ends up here is really cool. 10 years ago. So yeah, going back into the annals of history, I came here because of a couple people. I worked with Kevin Funk and Brent Martin at United Rentals in East Peoria, and Kevin's was the first one to come over here, and I end up, you know, good friends with Kevin, and we go to the same church. And that next Sunday, I just asked, you know, hey, how are things going at Nussbaum, and he's like, you got to come check this place out. It's pretty phenomenal. So, poked around at it, just like Joe. I wasn't really looking for anything. It was fine where we were at, and and then Brent, same timing. We all came at about the same time in 2015.
Okay.
And I got over here and saw the place. This was brand new.
Yeah.
Kind of a funny story. When I was at United Rentals, I was a territory manager, and I was actually had some equipment here on rent while it was being built. So I was here as it was being built.
Wow.
Unbeknownst to me, I'd be working here at some point. So
that's cool.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
And then met with Jeremy and a few others, and I'm here.
Okay.
10 years later.
That's the story as it goes.
And Kevin
cool.
and Brent are both here too, so still, yeah. So it's been fun.
That is something. Yep. I think it speaks to the culture, and we were just talking yesterday about the turnover rate, and just in the industry between our drivers and our office, it's pretty low. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So I have a fun, lighthearted question before we get into the meat and potatoes of sales. What is the most interesting or unusual item you have ever helped ship?
I thought a long time about this one. Anyone want to go first?
I thought about it too, and I'm trying to, you know, typically unusual and interesting is what we don't want to haul. Yeah.
You want normal and palletized.
But one that stands out is a load of potatoes from out west.
Okay.
Yeah.
The potato farmers?
Yeah, a load of potatoes. I'm assuming it was going to be made into chips somewhere, but
sure.
That was floor loaded, so it was probably a little messy, and yeah.
So they just
out of the norm
loaded it straight into the trailer.
Yep.
Just like conveyor belt potatoes.
Throw them in.
Yep.
Wow, crazy.
Wow. One I remember, we had a driver. He was out in the west, northwest. I think it was Oregon or Washington. It was a truckload of pine cones. And I forget if they just shoveled them in or if they put them in big garbage bags and then threw them in. But yeah, coming back this way to, I don't know, some small shops that.
Yeah.
Decor stores. Yeah.
Yeah. Decor,
yeah. What do you do with a trailer of pine cones?
DC.
Mulch them up. Yeah.
DC. Yeah. Mulch them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And mulch, true.
Throw some glitter on them and
there's
sell
always
them,
a purpose, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would say, so I had brokered a load one time out of El Paso, Texas, going to Dallas. And if you don't know, that's basically the distance of Hudson to Pittsburgh or here to Atlanta. It's pretty long. You forget how big Texas is.
Yeah.
El Paso, Texas to Dallas. And it was candy canes in the middle of summer. It was July. And this is a broker we work with quite a bit. They know that we're just 53-foot dry van trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to Dallas and they all melted. You know, it's 120 degrees probably in that trailer.
Oh, my.
So we were compensated to bring them back to El Paso. Not sure why they're shipping candy canes in the middle of summer. Pretty interesting.
From the desert.
From the desert, yeah.
Were they pallets? Or
yeah, I think they're palletized.
Yeah.
But I remember the driver called and he was like, these did not make the trek.
Oh, they're my.
And we don't know. They're sealed, right? So we don't know
sure.
the product. And usually the broker's pretty upfront with what we're shipping. But
sure.
in that case, yeah. So we were compensated to go back and then got another load.
Yeah. It's probably a really hot day.
It was like mid-July.
Oh, man.
I wonder if it melted like onto the trailer floor or like if it was a mess or not. I
remember this. Yeah.
But yeah. I just remember that. Nasty. Sticky, like, just tacky stuff. Gross.
Yeah, they call the elves to clean up.
So, Santa's helpers came out.
Yeah.
Man.
So that was an interesting, that's the most interesting one I've seen.
Yeah. They probably need a refrigerated.
Right.
Yeah, that was control for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. The one I've heard... And I think this is at a different company for someone else, they said, was a pallet of unreleased iPhones. I always think that's really interesting. Yeah, it's, you know, cool. Millions of dollars of iPhones. And so they obviously need an escort, police escort, to do that type of stuff.
High value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So that's cool. Hmm. What gets you excited about sales? When you wake up in the morning, why do you get excited to come to work and do what you do?
The culture here, is a big one. That's probably the easy one. That's the layup because it is so good. So coming in and, just the people we work with and the drivers, plays a big part of it. And then just the competition and the interaction between our customers. Like you said, we do go out and visit them, in person, wherever that may be. So a little bit of traveling. So that also was fun. But just always chasing that carrot of success for yourself and for the company as well. And, you know, it depends on what it is and how hard you go for it. But every day seems like it's a different one. So, very exciting. And then obviously getting the win. We're competitive guys. We're hunting. So we like to, you know, hunt down and get that win for sure. They come few and far between sometimes, and sometimes you're hot and you get a few in a week or something. So for sure, like to get the wins.
Mm, yeah, and like we've talked about this, a little bit of pressure almost to, you know, get those wins. Like, you know, companies performing well, then everyone that reflects everyone's well-being.
Yep, a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Mm. Brent.
Yeah. Mark summed up that really well, and I'll just reemphasize it. When you enjoy the people that you work with, coming to work is is a real blessing. So I'm thankful for that. That definitely lets me arrive at work in good spirits, just because I know that my interactions are very positive here. Through all departments, there's just good friendships here. And then the competitive side, we do want to win. We want to keep growing as a company, and I would mention the responsibility piece of, hey, we have drivers that are relying upon us, you know, and families that, you know, our hunting, our leads, the business that we secure does make a difference in their livelihoods, and also for the future. And then I would just say too, in the purpose-driven mindset, just the mission mindedness that Nussbaum does through the message that we spread out on the road, through our trailer graphics, just through the image and our interactions, just really keeps me fired up. And if we can, the more that I can do in sales to keep growing, the more trucks we have on the road, the more positive interactions that we're facilitating.
Yeah, so that's awesome. It's cool.
Yeah. Bunch of great points. I would say the culture piece, I was talking to Jason VanWert, a little water cooler talk at the end of last week. And it's just a culture. It's a job, it's stressful, but it's working here is like 4:30 always kind of creeps up, which can't be said at a lot of places. You never want to leave. It's just kind of like the day ends, and you're like, oh man, like the day's over. Like, it's that feeling working here. No Sunday scaries.
Yeah.
Coming into work. And I'd say the discovery piece of the sales role.
Yeah.
In terms of building rapport with customers, maintaining those relationships, interdepartmental, the process, and in this role being the quarterback, operating in the gray. And getting all those groups together to find a tailored solution for our customers, that's always super exciting.
That's cool.
Every bid process, there's always some kind of new wrinkle, it feels like, that you're kind of figure out that solution and how to present to the customer. So
it is a very strategic position. Like I said, that the quarterback, arranging everyone, you know, throwing the pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned it really quickly because, like, the first couple of bids I had, I got to get pricing and I got to get ops in a room, and we got to vet this out, and it's just it's learning those cadences and when to schedule those meetings, and having the background, the network background coming from ops has been super cool. And for me, it's been so easy to sell because I believe in the product. You know, it's easy to sell something when you believe in it and having done it. So
yeah, that makes sense. When you're making the actual product, you want to sell that product more. Awesome. So we made this episode really easy to remember on what you can get out of it. And we made an acronym so you can take this home, because I usually forget what I learn in a podcast. So if you forget, made it really easy. It's an acronym for sales. It's sales, S-A-L-E-S. So we'll use those as guiding points on what makes success in sales. What is a day in the life? So the first one being S, strategic outreach, hunting and bringing in shippers. How do you do that? How do you hunt and bring in shippers? How do you do that outreach part? So the first S, strategic outreach. How can we be strategic about who we reach out to, and what are ways that we do that?
I'd say for starters, we know what what industries we that we can and can't ship, what products we can and can't ship. So you're already narrowing that field down to who you're peppering on a day-to-day basis with our outreaches. We have a goal as BDMs of 5 new customers a day that we're outreaching to. We use different avenues for that. So Google Maps is a big one.
Yeah.
We have network strategies that get emailed every week from the ops group. So it's giving us lids, so lanes in demand. So it's, for example, Uline, we have a big lane going into Edna, Ohio, so Columbus. So Columbus has become a big lid for us, getting backhauls out of there. So using Google Maps, looking at warehouses, finding those new customers. A new one that I've started using, I think Brent and Mark, you have too, ChatGPT has been interesting. In terms of honing in on a city, and finding those manufacturers that may be a little more difficult just to look on a map and find. That's been a really cool tool to hone in on that. I would say too, what's helped me a lot is leaning on some of the tenured news bombers. I've had conversation with Doug Bradle maybe about lanes with customers we've hauled in the past, maybe one-offs that we need to poke at. Maybe it's been a decade, but he's got that knowledge. So so yeah, there's a lot of different channels and avenues that we use.
And people are really busy, and it's hard to get people's attention. So I'm assuming that there's a lot of just people not responding, ghosting you. that stuff probably happens, at least in a market like we are today. And we have to be strategic. Right now we're in somewhat of a down or maybe slightly coming up market. So that can be difficult.
To build off of what Joe said, certainly we can identify on the front end kind of the industry, the areas, and you know, the best fits for our network, and kind of go after that. And then we're taking it to the next level of, hey, we've identified some companies, then we want to be strategic on who we're connecting with. So you know, we're looking to connect with roles like transportation managers, supply chain directors, procurement managers. So reaching the right people to try to increase the odds of, hey, someone takes an interest, someone's heard about an award that Newsbomb or, you know, recognizes our presence in the industry and gives us a return, and then a return response. And then, that's a win just to get that in this environment. And then if we can get a call with that manager that manages the bid, that the decision maker on that, then that's another win. And then it's another strategic layer of questions, asking the right questions to determine, okay, this is what your footprint looks like, but what are you really shipping, and what are the characteristics of your freight? What is the makeup of your carrier base? Are you heavy on brokerage, which, you know, tells us that, hey, it might be a little bit less desirable for us just for competition sake, But what's important to them too? You know, is service really important? You know, what kind of partnerships and longevity do they have out of their carriers? And so the right questions help us determine how strategic we can be and what areas of opportunity there are. And then, you know, as a good sales guy, you're passing off that knowledge to operations and pricing to collaborate together with your strategy as a whole to win some freight in that customer bid. So.
Yeah. You brought up something that I thought was important. We had a couple things that we wanted people to get take home with them on this podcast. One is we provide a premium service, and that's something we really pride ourselves in. We got the Cat Supplier of the Year. So Cat chose us as compared to all of their transportation, not just for truck and trailer, but for planes, trains. They chose Nussbaum as their Supplier of the Year. I think that says something about our drivers and the quality of the product that we're serving, that they really enjoy that. So I think that's something that I wanted to bring out too, is it's a premium service and we have to look for those right fits. Like, who is looking for that? And we do want to be strategic about the stuff we bring on. Is it a good fit? Like you said, we're looking for those backhauls out of Columbus. So we you have to be strategic in how that works out and looking for those good, what it's a win-win situation for both people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I wanted to quote Chris Aranda too. So my first week in the job, I had the opportunity to go with him to a customer visit, and he was on the phone on the way over with another customer, and he said, and this stuck with me, he was like, 99% of carriers can get the freight from A to B. We live in that 1%, that last 1%. It's that value add, the service, the technology innovation, the strategic partnership. And that one stuck with me for sure, that quote.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, that's right. That makes sense. The CAT Award, UI, Transfer Carrier of the Year, we just won.
Yeah.
Which is encompasses all those things. It's not just service, on-time delivery. It's it's all the departments working together.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of like the whole commercial delivery versus DiGiorno. And it's like the delivery guy pulls up and he's like bouncing, like listening to his music, the car, and like the pizza's like flying back there and he delivers it versus DiGiorno comes out and it's like all fancy and stuff. It's kind of what we do. It's like, you know, how do you want your freight to get there? Do you want it to be on time? Do you want it to be, you know, the best service possible?
Yeah,
so,
And that front end hunting is a major part of what we do. Some of the most successful leads that we get are direct leads from other customers or from people that work inside here in the office or the drivers. I would just encourage our drivers and anybody listening to this, if you know somebody or have an idea, drivers, if you land at a spot that you think would be a good fit for us, reach out to sales@nussbaum.com. And those direct leads are somebody that we reach out to. A lot of times the responses that we get are somebody that knows us, has worked with us in the past, has seen our equipment and really like what it looks like and likes what it displays, has interacted with our drivers in a positive way wherever they work, and then they've moved on potentially to a different company. Those are massively better chances for us to land if somebody knows about Nussbaum beforehand, because it gives us that much more momentum.
That's really good. Great thing to call out. So if you are aware of anything, communicate, bring that to our sales guys. That's awesome.
I'd say the last thing, coming from operations, very fast paced, you're putting out fires daily, to then sales.
Slow burn.
You know, the first week I'm like, nobody's responding, you know, like you're just not used to it, that cadence. I mean, I've had plenty of outreaches that I might get 1 or 2, 3 months later where you get a poke back or you're all of a sudden in a bid from that outreach. So it's definitely the long game. It's a long play and there's a lot of resiliency involved and never wanting to burn a bridge, because again, that no matter the situation, that customer that employee could go somewhere else, and you're building that rapport. So it's just a constant long game of building that rapport.
And you hit one of our other letters in our acronym, which is the L. So we got, which
I
is
jumped the gun there.
No, you're good. Long term, slails.
Misspelled it.
Long term relationships, and we'll come back to that. But that's one to be thinking about. It's the long game.
Yeah,
it's waiting. Yeah. Yeah. So some of those seeds you plant, you won't see come to fruition for a while. And what I had here too with the network strategies, you have weekly network meetings. What does that look like? A network email?
We have a weekly email that comes out with our network strategy. Chris, Aranda, and Doug Bradle meet, I believe it's once a month or once a, I think it's once a month, and take all our feedback from operations and sales of, you know, in our stats and what we have on Power BI, you know, what's our best fit, what's our best need, what's our greatest need, and then we review that as far as network strategy. And then that's a constant discussion in all our, we have daily or every other day now a pricing meeting, so that's brought up in those as well. So
yeah, that's great. And that's part of the strategy. It has to be growing not just one lane, but growing a network. It all has to grow.
Puzzle.
A giant puzzle that it's like 10 Rubik's cubes. So it's all one, you pull on one part of it and it affects another part. So it, I think Joe, you had a story about a time when you, you found a company and you were very excited, but maybe it wasn't the best fit.
It was the first response I got in my outreaches. So I learned very quickly not to celebrate too early. I can remember, like, I got one. So it was a good
conversation.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. And they weren't taking any calls at the time, so I wasn't able to get in front. It was just me over, over email providing as much info as I could to sell us on the front end. And then you get into the bid, and it ends up that their network doesn't necessarily fit, you know, align with what we have. I think it was like their main hub was 100 miles between Des Moines and Minneapolis. So just kind of an awkward sourcing location. But again, it's a contact, and that's somebody I'm going to want to continue to build that relationship with, whether he stays there or leaves or their network changes. So you learn quickly that, again, it's a very thorough, drawn-out process. And just because you get a response, you know, it doesn't mean you're in. There's a lot of legwork involved to sell yourself and sell the company.
Uline's a good example of that. I think we worked them for 3, 4, 5 years before they finally cracked the door open for us.
That's a great point. So the next one we had in the acronym is alignment with ops, and we've been talking about it, and that's the one we want to hit, is how do you align yourselves with the operations or the product that you're working with? So if someone's in sales but maybe not in the trucking industry, it would be whatever product that they're making, that's their operation. So how do you collaborate with ops? And there's something that, a phrase that was coined, the three-legged stool. I think someone, the CEO from Knight Swift, came up with this phrase. But the three legs on this stool is ops, pricing, and sales. And they all have to be in alignment. You don't want one person to have a say more than another person. So you want to work together. So how do you work together in that? How do you maintain the three-legged stool?
Sure, I can take that one. Well, I think having a really healthy checks and balances is important for any organization to make the best decisions that you can. And from the sales seat, we do want to win business, but we want to win business that is going to benefit operations, that's going to be easy for them to work with, and for our drivers too, the overall positive experience they have with these shippers. So again, to the strategic part, that's where it starts, right? We want to be strategic and bring in the right freight on. And then as we think about, okay, the decision making, let's say we get into a bid, you know, and we have this opportunity, sales has done their best job to vet it on the front end, but now we finally see all these lanes and we're looking at the locations. That's where, you know, operations is gonna provide insight, because they're dealing, you know, day to day with the nuts and bolts of our load shipping and going to different places. So they know our network balance better than anybody. And they're putting in their interest marking into that. And so I think the balance there, and why the balance is so important, is because, well, and I think we can bring pricing into this too, because that's a very important facet of winning the business and being competitive. So sales, wants to bring on the right customer, wants to have the win of growing Newsbomb.
Right.
And then operations wants the right type of fit. So they're looking at the lanes to make sure they fit our network. And yeah, I think that there's a responsibility there for sales to collaborate on the front end and sharing as much information as we can about that customer so that operations can have that knowledge and make their decisions, right? Based upon this customer is really easy to deal with, for example, or they're really flexible and they're a great fit for this other strategic location. And so as we can call that out and work together, you know, we're able to kind of pave the way, I feel like, and collaborate to make their life easier. And and I would say that that works the same for pricing. When they have that knowledge up front, that they can be strategic in saying, hey, we can be really competitive and give sales some really competitive rates to be able to present to the customer and set them up for success of securing this. And so we do that by using, well, we have Mark mentioned pricing meetings, but kind of on the front end of that even is a tool called SalesScope that pulls in all our bid data that is essentially manages our workflow. And as we move things from one person to another, it physically changes in that workflow. So we're able to keep track of everything. We're able to put notes in as far as our strategy. And then that all plays into kind of through the whole process and finalizing in a bid submission and putting pricing on. And so, yeah, anything to add to that?
Guys? I'd say based on the size and the strategy and the complexity of the bid, we're having pricing meetings, but then we're having side huddles. You kind of mentioned it, like getting everybody together before the pricing meeting, after the pricing meeting, just getting all of our ducks in a row, because there's like Brent said, there's just a lot of information, a lot of thought that goes into each bid.
And that avoids some conflict when you have one person calling all the shots, then later you might come around and say, hey, why did you agree to this? This has been awful. But then you can say, we all agreed upon this together at you the same time. We all worked on this. So you're all in agreement there and kind of build some trust.
Yes, the discovery piece with the customer is crucial to be able to sell internally. Because we're selling internally just as much, if not more sometimes, to operations, to pricing.
Yep.
Something as simple as getting drop trailer versus live loading information, shipping schedules, that allows us to sell internally, strengthen our pricing potentially to give us a better chance of getting in the door. So the three-legged stool, that's where it's crucial, and having all that information up front to present to our group to then have that strategy to provide to the customer.
That's good.
Very important, each piece of that stool. I mean, we're the horses, we're the dogs. We'd say yes to everything, right?
Yeah.
I think ops is like the Gandalf of the group. I mean, they're the wise counsel that are like, well, this might not
work out.
Like, what are you talking about? It's great. They're huge. Well, you know, then they have their points.
And,
It really keeps everybody in alignment and really agrees on that.
So. And I would just add to that, too. Like, we really need each other because if we're too conservative, we won't win anything. You know, and sometimes you just don't know till you know, you do your best, but you don't know till you know.
Yeah.
And so you discover that together, but as you mentioned, being collaborative on the front end, when you discover and then if it's really good, you celebrate. If it's bad, you know, you adjust and strategize on, okay, what do we do now? But it's interesting how that the collaboration and some of the strategy, it does change from environment to environment. Like right now, we're pretty hungry. So I think it's easier to be aligned on some things and maybe take, I wouldn't say a few more risks, but calculated, you know, decision making.
Yeah.
And then in a thrive environment, you know, when everything is coming our way, you know, and then we just don't have the capacity, and that's where I feel like sales is under the gun, because we're trying to sell, but there's a risk that we could sell out really quick, and sometimes we, you know, we want to keep our commitments and honor those. And we do a really good job with that here at Newsbomb. But it just makes for different conversations when you're trying to capitalize on a market and gain back some of the ground that you've lost in a market like this.
Yeah.
So, but it's all healthy, and I feel like the relationships are stronger than ever. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Mm.
The last thing with SalesScope is we've been using that. We always use the data, but right now we've had meetings and going back to historicals because our network has shifted a little bit. So bringing on new customers, vetting out the bids, even if there's no fruit initially, we can go back a couple years. I mean, I don't know what the cadence is on that, but Columbus, for example, we'll find past bids from historicals where it's like maybe it wasn't a fit 2 years ago, but it's a fit now. So now you're going to go back and pepper that customer and and try to get in because we have much more of a network fit. So the IT piece of it and the three-legged stool, it's massive.
Wow.
So
almost could be a four-legged stool.
With IT.
With IT,
they haven't quite made it yet.
They're more like the top that you sit on.
Yeah.
No.
But it's cool with all three pieces, and then you've got, at the end of the day, then ops gets their rating in, and then pricing comes to us, and then it's our job to relay that message back to the customer.
Yeah.
So it's we have to be on the ball.
On the ball, looking for
concise,
that.
Concise, and to be able to relay that message based on the pricing that we provide. So.
You brought up a great point, and really the next part of our acronym is that long-term relationships. You said you found that later, like there could be something about Columbus you discover that in the past did not work, but now it does, and that's the L, the long-term relationships. So right now we're up to S-A-L, just Sal. We'll get to the E-S. So you have to make those connections. And whether that's from a personal connection. So what are ways that you can build and maintain relationships with shippers? And you mentioned with Uline, something that did not work and took maybe 4-5 years before
it
came to fruition?
Three, 4 years, something along those lines,
Wow. So that's commitment to build a relationship with them where you're on, you know, same page. So how do you build relationships with shippers?
Constant but not overbearing connection outreaches. And then once the back and forth is there, then in person, and then just, discussion, and then hopefully experience, right? They give us a chance, and then we come through for them. Then there's trust built there. But, I would just say on the front end, just continuing to be the face of Newsbomb for those folks that are might be a little slow. Like right now, they might not need us, but if we're poking them once a month, once a quarter, whatever it is, when it does turn, that's what we keep, you know, trying to build each other up here through these slower times. Like once this thing does turn, we're going to be getting those seeds we're planting are going to be coming back. So
yeah.
So resiliency, we touched on that earlier, is key. Think about Chris with the U-Line, 3 or 4 years. I wouldn't say not taking no for an answer, but knowing that, building that relationship like he did, I think he was going up and having in-person meetings. We didn't have any freight. We weren't an incumbent, and they were still taking our time or using or allowing us to get in front of them to continue to sell us.
Yeah.
And he knew that it was going to work out eventually, right? Just that glass half full mindset.
Yeah.
So I think really it's just not being discouraged. Even if there's a no on the front end, and building that relationship to where it gets to the point where you can get in and be an incumbent. We have a carrier or a shipper that we didn't get anything on a bid this time, and I wanted to schedule a meeting right away to get feedback on our pricing.
And then
just to continue to stay in front. Keep Newsbomb at the forefront of their minds so that the next bid, when it's time to strike, that we're ready to go. So.
I think that illustrates something that you care too. It's like when you're doing something, you care about what you're doing. You want to put the best foot forward. So yeah, it's good.
You kind of got to be a little annoying. You're kind of threading.
You
got to
be a squeaky wheel. It's not too squeaky.
Right.
Yeah. You got to step in those doors and make some opportunities, but not be too annoying.
It's a balance.
It's a balance.
Works a turn off. Yeah.
I'll just add one small point.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times if you win something with a customer, you're starting that relationship. So you don't have a lot to go off of, and you might get a really small award, and it may seem even insignificant. But that award and that lane is a starting point. So service, well, I know we're getting into that next, but doing well, making a really positive impression really lays the groundwork. Mm. And so maybe if they're on an annual bid cycle, you know, next year there's an opportunity for more and to build that long-term relationship. So typically it doesn't start off with just this giant award and you know, trusting someone that they've never done business with.
They want to prove it. It starts small.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So could you share a story, success story, where a strong connection led to successful bids, where you had a good rapport?
Yeah, I can start off with the first one. I mean, one area I would say of expertise that Nussbaum has found us in is in the dedicated realm, and particularly with cat dealers. Caterpillar as a whole really appreciates our service. You mentioned the award that we've gotten. I'd say that has trickled down to enable us to grow in a lot of their cat dealerships. Mm. And so we're providing nightly parts deliveries that are high touch, high service, very important. So yeah, word gets around. And I would say that as word gets around, when we have opportunities, we've been very successful and continue to grow that. And so, and it's still an opportunity to continue to grow. So that service is appreciated. Again, speaking to the premium service that we offer, we're offering something that is crucial to construction customers and really all Caterpillar customers that has a direct impact on their business. And so, yeah, we've been able to find a niche there and continue to grow in that.
Yeah, that's cool. So growing in addition to CAT, but the CAT dealerships.
Correct.
Okay.
Adding new dealerships.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, a lot of our accounts have massive potential. Like, we have some massive accounts that we're doing business with. You know, on top of CAT, there's just other ones that might not seem very big right now when you look at the financials or the quarterly updates that Chris and Bill and Brent give. But if you pay attention, some of them are steadily growing. Mm. I mean, it's slow, but it's steady. I call out one, Daimler. We were just that last week. It's just we started business with them, serving them about 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. We buy Daimler trucks, Freightliners, so it was kind of had it in there. But every time we interact with them, you can just tell the business and the trust is growing. Mm. It's opening up different avenues into different segments of their business, so you kind of get multiple departments and multiple segments that they work under. So now we're opening up opportunities for their dedicated services. And then they also have open deck side of things that has been on tap. So just huge other accounts that we have that are massive companies that are successful that, you know, as we continue to build the relationship on our side, it just gives us that much more opportunity to grow.
Yeah, with really high ceilings.
Massive ceilings.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Well, just get your foot in the door. You know, just
that
put that
foot might be
there
in the door for a few years, but, you know, might, maybe year five, you get your arm in, and then the next arm, and then, you know, then you're in.
Yeah.
Like,
leg falls asleep, you know, wake it up.
Yeah, might try to slam the door on your foot. You might lose a toe or two, but you're still in.
Maybe this door analogy went a little too far.
I keep going if you want.
Oh, it's okay. So the next point I wanted to touch on was the E in sales. So S-A-L-E, we just have sale now, but the E is excellence in service. This is a point that we've been talking about, the premium quality that we provide. Yep. So why is Nussbaum so great? What makes it an excellent service?
Well, that's almost its own stool in amongst itself. You got operations on that stool. You got the maintenance department, our equipment holding that side up as well, and then our drivers. When all those three are humming, it makes our job, I wouldn't say super easy, but it makes it a lot easier. Especially with incumbents during bids, we can go back. Scorecards are a big deal for a lot of our customers, so that gets reviewed during the bids. And if we can, you know, stand up in front of them and show, hey, we're 99.8 or 100% on time, that's nothing we do. That's all operations. That's the equipment running. That's the driver being responsible and getting there on time and safely and all that stuff. And then the safety stuff, we haven't even touched on that huge award we just won what was that, TCA or
Safety
Award. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. So congrats to our, shout out to our safety team for that and the drivers for getting us that. That's a big, big deal. And we can now stand up in front of folks and say, hey, that's just another notch in our belt that we can brag on.
That's like a national award, right? I think it's the biggest award that we've won to date.
It's huge,
It's huge.
So ops, drivers, maintenance, and then I'll add another leg is the safety side, the HR side too. So.
Yeah.
Actually have concrete awards and examples to provide to customers, tangible stuff. I mean, for me, it's pay by mark, 100% asset-based, so scalability, our capacity, able to move trucks and trailers around to fit customer needs. Employee ownership's always a huge one we're pushing to our prospective shippers, current shippers, just the personal responsibility for all of us and every kind of element, everything we touch.
Yeah,
it's reflective in the U-Line Award, kind of, like I said, encompassing all service, IT, and the partnership. And then that, in turn, opens up our ability to get the Aetna lane, the Columbus lane. What we did with Brazelton and the service that Seth and Kelly provided for the Brazelton, Georgia lane allowed us to secure the Aetna lane.
Wow.
So that service is a stepping stone to our point of getting in and then building that network, which is huge.
That's cool.
So yeah, service and performance. The safety one's huge. To be able to talk about driver habits and then to be able to piggyback on those efficiencies and those numbers between our miles per gallon.
Right.
A cool one that was found recently is our out of service with DOT is like a 4% over the last 2 years. So every time we're pulled over, it's a 4% out of deemed out of service, 4%. So it's like 800 occurrences, and we've had 32 trucks that have been deemed out of service. So 44%, which the national average is like 25.
Is it really
30 somewhere in there?
That is.
So it's again another concrete example when we're trying to sell to our to prospective customers.
Wow.
That you can lay all that out.
And comparing that to the industry standard, that's huge.
It's huge. Yeah, I mean, it's
a huge difference.
A true testament to maximize our capacity and our asset utilization, our safety. So
That's awesome. I mean, safety. Our safety team is very serious about what we do, and would be an ESOP too, not wanting to cut corners. And the field, the ownership, we have people that are more tenured because there's less turnover, so people feel more dedication than Nussbaum. And when you're only worked at a company for 2 months, you don't feel, oh, I don't have to do everything. But taking that safety seriously, and that 4%
out of service.
Out of service. That number DOT reflects that.
Because safety and maintenance,
those inspections are being done, and they're being done well. So that's a great point.
I'd say one more thing, retention too.
Yeah.
Driver retention.
Yeah.
You know, if you can sell, we're 32% industry average of 90. You're going to have the same drivers touching your lanes on a consistent basis. That just speaks to the culture that we have here, right? It's that's another feather in the cap to talk about is the retention piece. And
yes, so retention about 30% for drivers.
The industry turnover average is 90%, and
90%
32, I think, was the last year.
Floats in the low 30s.
Low 30s.
That is crazy.
another unbelievable stat that you can speak to.
Wow, and I think that speaks to how people are treated like human beings. That you're not just a number, but that's whether that's with our drivers or with our customers, that personal interaction. That's why people want to stay, is because I'm not getting yelled at by my driver manager, that they actually talk to me like I'm a human. You know, that's really good.
I'll just speak to the ESOP piece just had an interesting conversation. We have a dedicated customer. We've been doing business for 4 to 5 years, and I've been trying to get them here for an in-person visit, and they finally came to visit. And just talking about kind of our tenure together, it came out that when I had that initial conversation, when we were going through the bidding process in that first year of doing business 5 years ago, I'd mentioned an ESOP, you know, that we were an ESOP, that we'd begun that journey, and he said that was a deciding factor.
Really?
In deciding to go with Nussbaum because his dad's business became an ESOP, and he just saw the positive influence on the culture and just the quality of business that they were able to put forth. And so, that was interesting to hear 5 years later, because I feel like we sell that a lot. And, you know, certainly when we can start, you know, business with a customer and they can actually see the impact that we make, that manifests itself. But to hear some firsthand experience that he knew what it was and he knew that it was a good thing, was really confirming to hear that we're headed down the right path.
That's pretty cool. That's that personal connection, having that personal with another ESOP company. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Great point.
Yeah.
The last letter in our takeaway from the day is S, sustainable. And this goes along with the bid process, which we've covered a fair amount. So we'll skim through this. But when it comes to being a sustainable company, the bid process is thoroughly vetted. So a question I wanted to ask is, what are some of the challenges in the bid process as you come across that, and how do you overcome them?
A big challenge right now is the market that we've been up against here for a while. So it might be a great fit, great customer, ops likes it, we like it, pricing likes it. Just with the flood of carriers out there right now, there's a lot of, you know, we might like that lane, but so does 100 other carriers, plus the incumbent, right? So how do we differentiate ourselves on that? And then during the bid process, that's our job, is to differentiate ourselves with the customer. That's where the long-term relationships come in. Hopefully you got some trust built, because it is a big challenge, especially on a brand new customer. Brent alluded to it earlier, they're not going to give you, you know, half of their network on that first slide. They're gonna most likely kind of inch you in, get your foot in the door. So,
yeah, and that's tough. To really come into a place when everything's going against you, and when you first joined sales, someone told you something very memorable that spoke about the pressures of working in sales.
I won't name names, but yeah, somebody that worked here, congratulated me for my role getting that. I moved from recruiting into sales, and he goes, yeah, congratulations, you now have my livelihood in your hands. So kind of half joking, but dead serious too, you know. So
yeah.
So a lot of challenges as far as that, bearing that weight of the pressure of the tip of the spear, you can call it too. So, but like we said earlier, when you get the wins, it's really gratifying.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So in my 7 months so far, I think the hardest part, the most challenging, especially with cold outreaches, and especially with some of these larger shippers, is getting airtime or getting FaceTime. A lot of them, like I said earlier, you might all of a sudden just randomly get a request to join the bid without any official cadence with them. So that's where the long game comes in, and trying to get as much information as possible. A lot of times they'll just tell you, hey, we're not taking meetings right now. I think the first step is we need to confirm who those contacts are with a lot of these shippers, which part of our lead list is response, yes, market green. So we know that's the contact.
It's a live person.
Yep, it's a live person. That's who we need to be talking to. And then, that first bid may not have any fruit. We're doing all we can to provide a proposal. And then whether there's fruit or not, it's the follow-up afterwards. And that cadence for me being new, getting those contacts and then making sure I'm getting meetings. And just building that relationship. So,
and so you mentioned something that's maybe a new term, at least to me, learning about sales, is RFP, which stands for request for proposal. And you said we're just working to get towards that proposal. You're getting your foot in the door to get towards that proposal. So how does cold outreach differ from the RFP, request for proposal?
Well, I'd say hopefully the cold outreach leads to the opportunity to even be a part of the carriers that are participating in that RFP. Typically we're sending emails, we know we're calling different outreaches through LinkedIn, and then they're either vetting us on the front end. Hopefully we're getting that intro call and we're talking about our network and all the good things that Newspawn brings to the table, and then we're gaining access based on that conversation to the RFP. And so that's a foot in the door, but as Joe mentioned, just a beyond that, I'd say even, you know, as we're participating, if it's a new customer, the follow-ups, whether we win something mm-hmm. or we don't, you know, that's where that cadence starts. That's where that relationship starts. And mm-hmm. so we got to keep building off that, playing the long game.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the challenges right now, Mark mentioned the rates. That's definitely a big portion of it. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to differentiate ourselves to say that, hey, we need sustainable rates in place. And I mm-hmm. think that's kind of where what we're all thinking. Like there's great freight yep. out there that fits our network. And yep. it's really, really appetizing to just want to just take advantage of it, right? And we're fighting against carriers that, maybe provide a lesser service and are very, very hungry. Yep. I would say almost beyond desperate to just win that. And that's yep. what we're up against. And we're not desperate.
Yes.
We're in a much better place. And so, you know, we want to build a long-term relationship. Mm. And so as we're looking at locking in and putting our trucks on the road for this customer for 12 months, you know, we want those rates to be sustainable, and part of that is convincing the customer that, hey, the service that we're providing is going to be worth it,
yes.
and that, hey, you know, you lock in with us for 12 months, you'll be happy with our service, and we'll continue to bring value to your shipping network, and you'll be impressed with Newspawn. So,
yeah, that's huge. And this is our last point, the sustainable. We want it to be sustainable in the high market and the low market. We want to be able to deliver. We don't want to overcommit ourselves and all of a sudden we're short a truck and we committed to doing these lanes and we can't do it. It's not working out. So I think that's a great point to make, that it's something that we want to make sure we're pricing in a good rate, so we can last the highs and the lows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. For someone not smart like me, what is a proposal? What is a proposal in simple terms?
Our rates, our strategy, how we're going to cover, if it's a dedicated loop, you know, just the details within that, how to pretty much, that simply put it, this is how we're going to service your lanes, and this is how much we're going to charge you.
Yeah.
Pretty much mm-hmm. is what a proposal is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brent created a really good template when I first came on, and it's kind of our history. Mm-hmm. It's just a single page, our history, what we're going to provide as a carrier, and then our primary is a focus mm-hmm. based on the three-legged stool mm-hmm. and the interest marking. What are we keying in on these lanes or on this bid? Mm-hmm. What lanes are we really going after and wanting to secure? Mm-hmm. And then it's a template that we provide to the shipper. Once we submit our pricing through whichever avenue or tool that is. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a one-page document, and that seems like it's been super helpful, and there's been a lot of good feedback, at least on my end, from a customer being appreciative of us submitting that. It's a more formal document that I feel like is a differentiator.
Yeah, anything we can do to differentiate mm-hmm. ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
To sum that up, it's a combination of the actual physical rates that are being uploaded on this bid tool site, combined with maybe a written summary and anything mm-hmm. verbal that we can add to the customer yeah. that comprises a proposal.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a lot more than just an invoice, but it's correct. A very descriptive, of yep. everything that's going to go, because it's not a very simple thing. It's not like, I'll give you this iPhone for $500, but mm-hmm. it's a very complicated product that is mm-hmm. being sold. So that makes sense.
Yep.
So I've learned a lot of things here, and that sales is not just all fun and games. You do a lot more than just going to visit places, but we've talked a lot about the quarterbacking. Joe, you've mentioned that, how you're going out there or getting people together, the three-legged stool. So in summary, some things that we wanted to take away, and if there's anything else that you want people to take away from this episode, please share that. We talked about premium service, getting information. You guys are trying to collect information from internal and external. And a quote I love that one of you said, it's easy to sell this place for what other people do. I like that. And just the acronym we've been talking about, S, strategic outreach, A, alignment with ops, that three-legged stool, L, long-term relationships, E, excellence in service, and S, sustainable growth, sales. I think that's right.
Good work.
So,
yeah.
So, anything else you'd want someone to take away from this episode on how they can remember more about sales?
I just say during this time we've been it's been challenging for a couple of years, but the greatest opportunity for growth is during hard times, right? We've been sharpening ourselves and being more strategic. So we're, the next time Thrive comes around, I think it's going to be even better than the last one, because we're that much better, that much sharper, that much smarter going after what we want to go after. So I'd say just hold on for the ride. It's going to be fun.
I like that. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'll just say, if any of our customers happen to listen to this podcast, thank you for your business. And thank you for partnering with Nussbaum. Just, we really appreciate the opportunity to make a positive impact on your organization. And then a big thanks to all the departments here at Nussbaum. Without them, they really make up who we are. And everybody plays an important role in part of this employee-owned company to driving the success. So thank you.
Well said.
Yeah. And that makes it easy to sell. To sum that up, I would say too, with drivers, anybody in office, any leads that you might see on the road.
Yeah.
I know drivers have sent quite a few in, which is awesome. Continue to send those in.
Bring them on.
Anything we can uncover and go after, we're ready to attack. So so yeah, continue to send those in.
It's awesome. Sweet. Well, thank you guys for doing this. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for orchestrating.
Yeah, I didn't know much about sales. I know a little bit more now, and I hopefully for the people listening too, you understand a little bit more about sales, about Nussbaum, about our premium service. Thank you to Daniel for running our audio and visuals.
Yeah.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us today. And that's all we have for this episode. So until next time, stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hi, this is Lisa from Recruiting at Nussbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit nussbaumjobs.com. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.